Maverick Matthews presents Mindfire, only on Fringe FM.
But it's your job to bring your gift and to mend the part that you can touch.
It's unbelievable to have this kind of power.
What you got ain't nothing new. This country's hard on people. Can't stop what's coming. Ain't all waiting on you. That's vanity.
Welcome to Mindfire with Maverick Matthews, only on Fringe FM. This is our inaugural episode. Thank you for being here. I'm excited about this new project. This project is going to be a collection of stories from my adventures on the road and my life in Hollywood and elsewhere. So the first half will be a story. And for this first episode, it's just going to be me. In the future, I'm going to try to have someone here who I'm actually telling the story to so that they can ask questions and kind of guide the direction. I thought that'd be interesting. So that'll be happening in the future. But for this first episode, I just wanted to spend the time just solo, just me and you. So thank you for being here. The second half of the episode will be a down-tempo electronic music mix. I've been working more in down-tempo. You know, on my other podcast, Pepper for Your Steak, which you can find on all the outlets and platforms, I do an up-tempo set that is meant for, really meant for exercise and specifically trail running because that's what I'm into, but you can use it for whatever you want. For Mindfire, this down-tempo stuff is really for kind of a deeper, relaxing meditation and or, let's be honest, it's kind of baby-making music for adults to be done responsibly between, you know, consenting adults. So obviously use this music however you will, but those are kind of the themes that I'm working with here. I wanted to create a project that was a little more late night appropriate. Pepper for Your Steak is kind of a fast-paced daytime thing, and so I wanted to create a kind of a late night thing. So thank you for being here. Let's get into this first story. And this first story comes from my time in Hollywood. Now, if you're unfamiliar with my career and background, as I assume a lot of people are, I worked as an artist and fixer, essentially, in Hollywood for over a decade now. I continue to work there. I started out as a producer. I produced two seasons of Duck Dynasty as a field producer, seasons 4 and 5, when it was kind of hitting its peak. That was amazing. I got to live with the Robertsons in Louisiana. And then after that, I came back to Hollywood thinking that I would have, you know, a pretty easy transition because I had this major credit under my belt. I thought, wow, I'll be able to just walk right in and get some work. Well, it doesn't really work like that. You have to build up a support network of contacts, people who want to hire you. And this is what people refer to when they say Hollywood's about networking. Well, it's just really about making friends. Hollywood is governed by nepotism and opinions and making people feel good when you're around them. That's why people like DJ, The Rock, Dwayne Johnson, are so successful, because you can tell that that guy is a great person to be around and work with. And people want to be around him. Something that I can't remember who told me this, but I was working on a show. I want to credit this to Chris Partita when I was working on Marriage Bootcamp Reality Stars, but I'm not sure. He was one of the first people to give me any length of work, like 6 weeks of work. And I think he said, you know, you have to remember that there are a lot of talented people in this town. There's a lot of talented people that people can hire. You don't do your job, you can be replaced by 10 other people who are begging to do it just as good, if not better, than you can. The way that you differentiate yourself, the way that you make yourself unique, is by giving more than you're paid to give, and by being fun to be around, having good charisma. And so there were different stations in Hollywood when I started to get frustrated with the way things worked, especially in the beginning when I didn't really understand how things worked. And I would lose my temper, or I would frustrate people or whatever. And I lost relationships because of that. People were like, I'm not going to hire that guy again. He's too frustrating to be around. And there's a dozen other people I could hire to do the same job. And that's true at every single level, from production apprentice all the way up to, studio head. These are just humans. They're just people. And really what you realize is that every single job in the industry is a job that people are lucky to have. And it's not as glamorous as everyone outside the industry thinks it is, but it is definitely better than the average day job because mostly of your schedule. When it's time to work, we work really, really obscenely hard. And when it's time to play, we play harder than most. And the schedule is not 9 to 5. When it's time to work, you work. And the rest of the time, you do whatever you want. You go to brunch. You go to the beach. You go on vacation. The standard workday starts at 12 hours long. And yes, it's cushy. If you're on the right set, the food is great. If you're on the right set, craft services is there to make sure that you have healthy snacks, and they're bringing smoothies around to you while you're working, and they're bringing you bottles of water, and they're making sure that someone's holding an umbrella over your head, and they're making sure that you're out of the elements, and that you have jackets. You know, I've had jackets distributed on one set. I've had all kinds of cool stuff. But if you're on the wrong set, you could be in the middle of the desert at 115 degrees with no shade for 12 hours with barely any water and some fucking peanuts. I've worked on those shows too. And I think it's important to do both. I think one thing that happens to people in the industry is once they reach that upper cushy level, they stop hustling. And that's why you see so much garbage art within the industry. They get up to the spot where they're getting the real money, they're getting the real experience, they have people waiting on them hand and foot, and they stop hustling. The people I saw working the hardest were the up-and-comers, the people who were in the middle of their path, really striving, putting in extra time, going home and writing, working on their side projects. Those were the people who inspired me, and that's the person I want to continue to be. And even I've had a hard time with that. And I haven't reached the out game. You know, I don't have that FU money. I barely have any money. But I definitely have enough respect in the industry so that when I do have work, it's well paid and I'm taken care of. And so shout out to people like Luis Diaz, production designer and art director extraordinaire. Shout out to people like Johnny Love, production designer extraordinaire. Chris Partita, even Lauren Meyer. People who really have helped me along my trajectory, given me work at times that maybe I didn't deserve, but I had to step up to meet the challenge. And I did. And it was awesome. So here's a quick story. Before I got to work in the film and television industry, but I was getting the occasional job here and there. I had just come off the number one reality show on television at the time, Duck Dynasty. I was living in an apartment in, I can't remember, Franklin Village. That's what it's called. Right next to Beechwood Canyon, right next to Hollywood. And I was subletting an apartment with my cousin from a model who had gone to Europe for the summer. And he was an extremely Zoolander type. In fact, we ended up losing this apartment because we deposited all our money into this model's account, and he had pre-written checks to pay the rent with, and while he was in Europe, he spent the money. He wasn't paying attention to his balance. He spent the money, and the rent checks bounced, and we got evicted. It was a disaster. But for the couple months that we were there, it was an adventure. And we were having barbecues by the pool, and I was working as a valet. I had a day job because I didn't have enough production work yet. I was working as a valet at the W Hotel in Hollywood. Now, anyone who knows the W Hotel now knows that it is a garbage hole that attracts garbage people doing garbage things. Anyone with any respect goes to the hotels on Sunset. You know, or even farther, you know, the Beverly Hills Hotel, Chateau Marmont, you know, stuff like that. The wannabes go to the W because they'll let anybody in, and it's just below the price point to keep out the riffraff, and I had some crazy experiences there as a valet. In fact, a quick story about that hotel. When the valet manager was taking me around the property to show me the property during my orientation, we ended up down in the parking garage because there were some tough corners. And you're driving Lamborghinis and Bentleys and stuff down into this parking garage. And some of the guys had clipped these corners and stuff. So he's kind of pointing out the dangerous points out. And we came around a corner and there were like 12 mattresses stacked up against the wall. I said, "What's up with these mattresses?" And he looked at me and said, "Well, that's this week's toss-outs." And I go, "What do you mean?" And he goes, "Well, these are the mattresses that somebody pissed on or threw up on or took a crap on or bled on or whatever. That we had to throw them out. And that's just for this week." And I was like, "I will never stay in this hotel." I'm not here to disparage that brand. There's some interesting W's in different parts of the world. The one in Hollywood is garbage. Maybe it'll come under new management. I'm sorry. They used to have a rooftop party that was pretty famous when it was sponsored by Dre's. That's the same as the hotel in Las Vegas that used to have the scene. Hollywood is all about the changing scenes. Where's the new scene? Is it at One Oak? Where's the new scene now? Where's the new scene? At one point, it was at that hotel. And then when the scene moved away from that hotel, so did all the high-caliber celebrities. And, you know, it lost its clout. So, sorry, W, to be honest, but just my opinion. So this story happened when I was working as a valet, and I was looking for other work, and I was pretty desperate. I wanted to stack some cash, and I started answering ads on Craigslist that were pretty radical. And one of the ads I answered on Craigslist was for, it said, cocktail server in gay men's nightclub. I said, "You know what? I'm not gay, but I have lots of friends who are gay. I have no problem with the family. The mafia in Hollywood is real, the big gay mafia. And no disparagement on those folks. A lot of them are my friends. And they have a very tight family there. And it's actually pretty cool. They look out for each other. They hire each other. They, you know, but they're not like, it's not to the exclusion of everyone else. They've taken care of me, right? It's just like, are you a friend of the family or not?" And so it's cool. I am a friend of the family. So I thought, hey, I can work in a gay nightclub. I'm relatively good-looking. I'm sure I'll be taken care of. I was pretty physically fit, which I still am. And I was like, well, I'll probably make good money. So I answered this ad. You had to submit a picture. So I submitted a picture. It was a face shot. And I got a pretty quick response. I remember we were having a barbecue that afternoon. And I had all this meat and stuff. And I was getting it ready. And I got a pretty quick response. I was like, oh, shit, these guys got me back. And he's like, look, this is a really big opportunity. We need people right away. We have servers that are making over $1,000 a night. Can I have a full body photo in your underwear? So I said, okay, that's fine. My buddy Johnny Love was over for the barbecue, and I said, hey, John, snap a picture of me in my undies real quick. And so I stripped down to my underwear, and I jumped up on the couch in front of an American flag that we had strung up on the wall, and I let him snap a pic in my underwear. And I sent that off. And I got this email back that said, this is great. You know, I'd love to do a phone interview with you if you have time. And I said, sure. So I, you know, went for a little walk, get away from the people in my apartment so I'd have a little space and quiet. And I got this guy on the phone. He called me and he goes, hi, I love your photos. I just want to talk to you about the job because it's a little intense and it's not for everybody, but I think you're a really good candidate and I could definitely start you right away. So how are you feeling about it? And I go, you know, great. Like I've worked in bars. I understand the nightclub atmosphere. I understand how to deal with high caliber people. I'm just looking to have some fun and make some money. And he's like, good, good. That's great. Okay, well, how do you feel? You know, one of the things that people have a real hard time with here is the uniform. And he goes, so how do you feel about the uniform? And I'll tell you, the uniform is a mesh thong. And it doesn't leave a lot to the imagination. And I said, and at that point I was like, what am I doing here? But at the same time, I was like, okay, a mesh thong, a mesh thong, a mesh thong, $1,000 a day, a mesh thong, $1,000 a day. Okay, I'm essentially considering becoming a stripper, I guess. So at that point, I was like, okay, I don't think I can do this just for the money. But I decided to keep going with the interview just to see what was what. So I said, yeah, you know, that seems pretty aggressive, but, you know, I could probably handle that, like, you know, give me more details. Like, what's the deal? You know, how much are your servers making? And he goes, well, it's a very fun environment. You know, you're just doing cocktail service for the VIP lounge. And, you know, the mesh thong is, it doesn't leave a lot to the imagination. So I just want to make sure you're comfortable with yourself and your body because we've had some servers who just weren't. And, you know, I had a guy the other day who had dish rags stuffed in the front and back of his thong, and that we just can't have that because, you know, we're trying to have fun here. And I said, okay, you know, I could probably handle the mesh thong. I go, is that something you supply, or do I need to go figure out where to get this, or what's the deal? And he goes, no, we have lots of them. And he goes, you know, I just have to be honest with you because I feel like we might hire you, and I really like, I've only spoken to you for a few minutes, but you seem like a great guy, and I just want to be really upfront about this job. And he goes, how comfortable are you about, you know, being around gay men? And I said, I have gay friends over at my house right now. Like, I'm very comfortable around the family. And he goes, that's great. That's great. He goes, so what would you do? I'm just going to put up a couple scenarios here. Because we've had these happen and I'm just worried about what happens in the future. So like, I'm just going to put up a couple scenarios and you just tell me what you would do. Okay. And I go, sure. He goes, what would you do if you were working and it was a really busy night and your thong broke? And I said, I mean, you know, you said you got lots of them on hand. I'd probably go back to the back and, you know, just put another one on, you know. And he goes, well, you know, sometimes it gets really busy and, we really don't have time to do that. And it's happened before. And what, you know, in the past, what guys have done is just keep working their shift. And, you know, I just want to make sure that it's not going to become an issue if, you know, because they're made really flimsy and, they don't leave a lot to the imagination. So we had a guy who was just kind of freaking out because it's broke. And I just want to make sure that wouldn't be a very big deal. And at this point, I'm thinking, like, what the fuck is happening here? But I didn't say that. I played along and I said, okay, yeah, no, I get it. You know, sometimes we have wardrobe malfunctions. I totally get it. You know, I'd probably just power through it, you know. He goes, power, yes, good, okay, right. And he goes, okay, right, okay. I'm going to be really real with you, okay, because I think we're so close to hiring you. I think I'm going to be really real with you. And this happened, and so I have to ask you, okay. Let's say that, you know, it's a really busy night and everyone's having fun and they're drinking and you're allowed to drink too. If the guests buy you shots, a lot of times they'll do that. And they really are about having your company around. And he goes, this happened and I want to know how you'd react because I just want to avoid bad situations in the future, like some things that have happened in the past. And I said, it's okay, man. You can tell me, you know, what are we talking about here? And he goes, well, What would you do if, you know, your thong had broken and you're just working, and of course you're naked, right? And, you know, this is a pretty tight space and everyone's close. What would you do if someone reached over and put you in their mouth? I swear to God, this is what he said. And I almost laughed out loud, but I stifled my laugh because I wanted to say, oh, you mean if somebody raped me in the middle of your club? What the fuck are you talking about? So I said, I don't know. I guess it would depend on who did it and what the circumstances were. I go, are we talking about a gorgeous woman here? And he goes, yeah, I know you're straight, but it's not, you know, there are women that come to the club. You know, we do have a lot of fruit flies, but, you know, probably it would be a man. Like, what would you do? And I was like, well, I would probably smack him playfully and say, cut that out, mister. And, you know, put him in his place. And of course, that's not really what I would do. If somebody did this to me, first of all, I wouldn't be working naked in a gay nightclub with no clothes on. Pretty sure that's illegal, number one. Number two, they're obviously operating in some kind of pretty wild gray area where, you know, it's absolutely within the realm of possibility that there's going to be roofies in my drink pretty quick. So this ship had sailed in my mind long before he asked me this question. But at this point, I'm still playing along because now I'm having fun. So I said, I'd probably smack his hand in his face lightly and say, listen, mister, I'm not that kind of girl. And he kind of giggled at that, actually, and goes, that's okay, great, okay, good, good. So, okay, good. What if, you know, we don't actually have to go any further. This is great. I'm actually interested in having you come in for a night. He goes, you know, our best guys are making between $1,000 and $2,000 a night, and they're having fun, and, you know, they're... He goes, I know that I'm not supposed to ask this, okay? And he goes, but I have to because it's part of the job description. So how hung are you? And I go, you know, I got to be honest. I'm kind of a grower, not a shower. I go, how warm is it in the club? And he goes, oh, it's very warm. It's very warm in here. And I was like, okay, well, on that, you know, if it's nice and warm and I feel safe and comfy and I'm having fun, then I'm, you know, I present pretty well. And he goes, good, that's good. He goes, so what are we talking here? Because I'll be honest, I have noticed a correlation between how hung a guy is and how much money he makes. And I said, well, I feel pretty confident that if it was a nice warm club and I was having fun, and feeling confident that I would probably, you know, earn a fair amount of money. I wouldn't be worried about that. And he goes, that's great. Okay, that's good. That's good. Okay, good. Great, great. Okay, well, you know, I think this has gone really well, and I would love to bring you in. When could you start? And I said, well, you know, I have to go over my schedule with some other things, and to be honest with you, based on the interview, I kind of want to think this over and decide whether or not this is really for me. So, can I get back to you in a day or two and like think about this? I kind of want to, you know, I just want to make sure this is what I want to do. And he's like, I totally understand. I want you to be comfortable. I want you to be here. I want it to be a play. We're a family, you know, we're very close. We're very close. And I want you to feel comfortable. So, you have my number. I'm really excited. I love your pictures. So please give me a call and I'll talk to you soon. And I said, thank you very much. And I hung up and I said, to myself, you know, I'm sitting there walking back to the apartment where my friends are drinking and having a party, and I'm about to tell this amazing story. And I thought to myself, you know, it was essentially a Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday gig. You know, $5,000 a week is not something I've experienced yet in this life. But I don't think $5,000 a week is worth becoming a bunch of rich guys' twink. And unfortunately, everything you've heard about Hollywood in that regard, and I'm not outing anybody here, this isn't a surprise, everything you've heard about Hollywood in that regard is true. And so, of course, I turned the job down, and I'll be telling you stories about other jobs in the future. But that was one of the more interesting scenarios when I was coming up. So we're hitting our time mark here. So I'm going to do a little sounder here. Thank you for listening to Mindfire with Maverick Matthews, only on Fringe FM. When we come back, I've got another segment of down-tempo electronic music. Maybe they'll be playing it in that club tonight. Maybe not. Have some fun. Thank you for being here. This is Mindfire, only on Fringe FM.
Get off the babysitter. Put on your pants. Come out with your hands up.
All right, here it is, the down tempo I promised you. Please visit fringe.fm for other amazing shows and more information about Mindfire with Maverick Matthews. You can also visit maverickmatthews.com for more information. Thank you for listening. Get ready to get down. Mindfire.
Let us have a world of men and women with dynamos between their legs. believe that today, more than ever, a book should be sought after, even if it has only one great page in it. We must search for fragments, splinters, toenails, anything that has ore in it, anything that is capable of resuscitating the body and soul. It may be that we are doomed, that there is no hope for us, any of us. But if that is so, then let us set up a last, agonizing, blood-curdling howl, a screech of defiance, a war whoop.
feel like I need to be honest with you. You're listening to the Mav Mix.
I be honest? I still want your hands up on my body. You still make my heart beat fast, Ferrari.